fixing to get you ready for some serious design automation. Y'all okay with that? Well, howdy. Welcome to Amelia's Weekly Fish Fry, brought to you by EEJournal.com. And I'm coming to you live from the capital of the Lone Star State, Austin, Texas. Y'all, I'm Amelia Dalton, if you didn't know that already. Now, if you've been at DAC for the past couple years, whoa, you should probably go home one of these days. People might be missing you. If you have attended, rather, the Design Automation Conference in the last couple years, you will know that the scope of the conference reaches far beyond your standard EDA tools of years past. Sure, we're still talking about design automation software, but now there's a whole slew of IP vendors and their software compatriots, IC packaging, embedded FPGA fabric, IoT, and all of its bells and whistles. So this week's episode of Fish Fry is going to be no different. We're going to do a little soup to nuts, DAC style. So let's start off with the EDA side of things. We all need a little RTL verification, right? So let's start off this week's Design Automation Conference coverage with John Molyneux, president of Blue Pearl Software, and talk about, well, yep, you guessed it, RTL verification. Let's go. My guest today is John Molyneux from Blue Pearl. Thank you so much for joining me, John.
Thank you for having me. Welcome to DAC 2017.
Excellent. So tell me, my audience, I know what Blue Pearl is all about, but maybe somebody in my audience doesn't.
So Blue Pearl is a RTL analysis company focusing on static analysis of RTL, making sure you have the ability to verify as you code, linting, CDC analysis, clock domain analysis, and SDC generation.
So I saw just now some information about your visual verification suite for the next generation of RTL verification. So tell me more about this verification suite.
The visual verification suite is really a broader term for all of our tools. So it allows you to do static timing. It allows you to do the CDC analysis with our analyze tool. It allows you to do the linting for all of RTL. What it really does is ensure that you can develop reliable RTL and at the same time make sure that you can verify as you code so you can repair, fix, and debug problems as early as possible with an automatic debug environment.
All right, so we are in Austin this year. What's your favorite part about having DAC in Austin?
Well, it's certainly not the heat and the humidity outside. Here, it's 100 degrees, but with 97% humidity, that's not the funnest part. Texas people are wonderful. They always make you feel at home. The restaurants, the food, fantastic. I love the music. I'm also a vinyl record buff, and there's a lot of vinyl record stores in town, so I'm probably going to go home broke.
Awesome. Well, I think that's all I have time for. Thank you so much, John.
Thank you for having me.
Next up, let's bring in some IP into the mix and some eFPGA IP at that. Let me introduce you to Owen Bateman from QuickLogic to talk about their take on embedded FPGAs. My guest today is Owen Bateman from QuickLogic. Hi, Owen. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Good morning.
So first off, what are you guys showing at DAC this year?
This is our latest family of devices. It's our embedded FPGA product family. As a lot of your readers and podcast listeners will understand, we've come from an FPGA background for over 20 years. And what we're seeing is a trend where people are looking at their own SoC developments. And with the IoT market space and things like this, it's very difficult to get a chip right first time. And now we're seeing a lot of people looking to embed some FPGA into their SoCs that gives them the flexibility to target multiple markets. Saves a lot of development fees. You don't have to have multiple ARM license fees for multiple markets. You can have one processor subsystem and completely programmable subsystem.
Now, I've seen eFPGAs a lot lately. What do you see as the trends toward eFPGAs? So why are we seeing that more prevalent now?
It's really the cost of development and the time to market. You know, the IoT market is such a wide market to try and look at. There's so many different elements of it. And if you're now, you know, looking at an SoC development, on a 28 nanometer or 22 nanometer, the development costs are huge. So you've got the length of time to develop your ASIC and the cost of the cores that you've got to implement into there. And it's a gray area. There's so many different versions of what you could come up with. And, you know, people aren't prepared to gamble. And this allows them to take that gray area out and deal with it, because most systems have a common subsystem, processor element, things that you want to put across the board. And if you want something for an automotive, there's a feature set that you want for that. And if you want something that's, you know, voice enabled, there's a completely different peripheral set that you want for that. So embedding eFPGA allows you a level of customization on a standard platform, and it reduces your overall development costs and development time to market. You don't have to have three or four different design groups doing three or four different products.
So we're at DAC this year. Now, what is the coolest thing you've seen at DAC this year, or in Austin, for that matter?
I like this little robot phone. Yes. that we've got here, a little Japanese robot. Apparently, there's a lot of lonely Japanese people in Japan, and they have $2,000 to spare on this little phone that, you know, looks at your moods and lights up differently, you know, depending on, recognizes what your mood is like and things like that. Ooh. So give a little dance to get you happy. I think that's kind of cute.
Nice.
Oh, and we're in it, of course, yes.
That's excellent. So one more thing you've got on your table here is the Runtastic smartwatch. Now, tell me about the use of eFPGAs in that one.
Okay. Actually, this was the very first use that we recognized for eFPGA. In this product, when you're looking at wearables and you're trying to look at what the human body is doing, so you want to look at context and gesture. So are you walking, running, sitting, standing, these kind of things. You have to continually monitor sensors all the time. It's not easy to batch data, you know, switch everything off, wake up, pull it down and see real time what's happening. If you're looking at a wrist action to see whether you're looking at, you've raised your wrist to see the watch face, you know, you don't want to delay. You want the display opening up very quickly. But if you have a main MCU, an ARM core or something running all the time, it drains your batteries very quickly. So in this particular case, we used eFPGA to do a very customized micro DSP engine. So highly tuned for context and gesture algorithms, but running at a very low clock frequency. So sample rates are 800 hertz, something like that, maximum for wearables. It allowed us to customize a little bit of logic in there, and that's what we're doing. It's a main M4 ARM processor that's switched off and held in a power down state all the time, unless something really complex needs to be done. And our eFPGA sat inside there doing all the sensor management and all the sensor data manipulation. And then it'll wake up and flag if it recognizes you've raised your arm, or if you're now stationary, you want to turn the GPS off and things like that.
Very cool. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Owen.
You're welcome. Thank you very much.
To finish things up in true Texas go big or go home fashion, let me bring in John Park from Cadence Design Systems to talk about IC packaging. Because without packaging, we'd all be up that proverbial creek without a, well, you get the point.
My guest today is John Park from Cadence Design Systems. Thank you so much for joining me, John.
You're welcome. Glad to be here.
So first off, let's talk about the trends in advanced IC packaging. So what are you seeing in that space?
So we're seeing primarily three different trends that are kind of the result of this more than more phenomenon that's going on today. Number one, we see a big push towards heterogeneous integration, taking multiple die from differing technologies and differing process nodes and integrating those all together into a single package of some kind. Historically, that was driven by the aerospace and defense marketplace, where they wanted to design not necessarily based on cost, but based on reliability in the so-called multi-chip module and system and package marketplace. And what we see happening now is more of the semiconductor companies wanting to get involved with heterogeneous integration because of some people can think that Moore's Law is starting to run out of steam. So people are looking for alternatives to continue to increase functional density and keep an eye on costs for their next generation devices. Another big trend we see is kind of the merging between IC backend and advanced packaging. So we used to have a nice clean handoff between the foundry did their job of producing the wafer that got sent to an OSAT, an outsourced semiconductor assembly and test company like Amkor ASE. They diced it and bumped it and put it in package and tested it, produced, you know, a known good device in a package. So we had that clear handoff, and now we don't really have that clear handoff anymore. We see technologies coming out of like TSMC, for example, with their integrated fan-out wafer-level packaging technology, where they're really doing the redistribution and the pin pitch adjustment at the wafer level, so the device can go directly from the wafer and onto the PCB in that case. We see other examples like 2.5D, what TSMC calls CoWoS, where people are putting multiple die on a silicon interposer. And that silicon interposer, again, kind of blurs this line. Is that an IC backend designer's responsibility, or is that the package designer's responsibility? And from our perspective, we provide the tools. So one customer might come to us and ask us to extend our IC layout capabilities to address some new challenge in packaging. Another company might come to us and say, you need to improve the package substrate design tools that we have. So we work with both OSATs and semiconductor companies. So they're coming at us from both directions saying, you know, we need to bridge the gap between what the packaging tools do and the IC layout tools do. So we're doing a lot of work there. In fact, on these first two trends, heterogeneous integration and this blurring or merging of IC backend and packaging, we announced 2 weeks ago a technology or a solution called Virtuoso System Design Platform, which addresses primarily these two challenges. And then the third big challenge we see has to do with some people in the industry call it pathfinding. And that's a kind of pre-design planning across chips, packages, and boards so that they can, for the purpose of optimizing each specific domain. So optimizing the chip floor plan in context of the ball map on the BGA, in context of the form factor and placement of the PCB. Kind of upfront pre-design, doing all that optimization across those different platforms with the goal of, again, reducing costs by reducing layer count because interconnects been optimized across all three domains. We have some technology we called Orbit.io that really addresses that. So those are the three big trends that we see that are impacting our business from an IC packaging perspective.
So let's talk about limitations now and circle back to designing heterogeneous multi-die packages. What are you seeing in there?
So what we see there, there's one big challenge. Historically, people have done their design work in different silos. So there's the IC world, there's the packaging world, and the board world. And when you design across those silos, people use different methods for capturing connectivity across those. So there's what that means is it becomes very complex to do layout versus schematic checking or LVS checking of the package. So when you take multiple die, you put them in a package, people still, they still do their chip level LVS, but now they want to do LVS of that entire package. And when you have different environments for capturing that connectivity, it's very difficult. So people have to basically export spreadsheets and do manual checking. What we've done with Virtuoso System Design Platform is eliminate that step. So Virtuoso now becomes the platform where the entire connectivity of the system is captured. So LVS has been completely automated in that flow. And the second piece of that is the ability to extract netlists into the circuit simulator. So when it's time to sign off on the entire system, you want to include the parasitics introduced from the package and PCB, like the inductance of the wire bond, all that flow of back annotating those parasitics back into that golden system level schematic has also been automated in the Virtuoso System Design Platform.
All right, so tell me a bit more about how the Virtuoso System Design Platform bridges from IC design to package to PCB, and what are we gaining by this?
That's a great question. Explained it a little bit in the previous segment, but it's really about the ability for circuit designers and package designers and layout designers to capture the entire system on a single platform in a single schematic in this case. So a single schematic that represents from the system level down to the individual transistors on the multiple dies that are in that package. And so what it gains us is the automated process of layout versus schematic checking or LVS. The value our customers see out of it is it provides a single point of reference for capturing the entire design in an environment that they're already comfortable with. So we're simply taking environment that our analog and RF IC designers have been using for decades, and we're extending it. We're creating a bridge, essentially, from the IC world into the packaging and board world through this Virtuoso System Design Platform enablement.
All right, John, it's time for your off-the-cuff question. I know you enjoy some golf, as I do too. First question, what's better, your long game or your short game?
I wish it's day to day, it changes. I can't get it all working together at the same time. Some days my driver's working, some days my short game's working, some days my putting's working. I'm waiting for the day when it all comes together and I can join the PGA Tour.
Yeah, me too. Okay, second question. Where's the coolest place in the whole world that you've gone golfing?
There's a couple places. There's one in Colorado called Arrowhead, and I'm from Colorado, so I get to play it quite a bit. It's got a bunch of big red rocks, and it's a very interesting golf course, fun golf course. And then probably my second favorite is I got an opportunity to play the Plantation course in Hawaii that the pros play on the, used to be the Mercedes Championship. I don't know what it is now, the Hyundai or something like that. I got to play that with my son. My son's quite a, he's a better golfer than I am. He's 14 years old, but he's quite a golfer.
Excellent. Well, I think that's all I have time for today. Thank you so much for joining me, John.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. If you're into Twitter, you can monitor our tweets at EEJournalTFM. And hey, if LinkedIn is more your thing, well, sure, you can follow us on LinkedIn as well. And we have a YouTube channel, keyword EE Journal. You should totally check it out. It is full of all kinds of techie videos, including our very popular Chalk Talk webcast series. And you can subscribe to our EE Journal YouTube channel as well. And by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Fryin' page, you can grab our Fish Fryin' RSS feed or subscribe to Fish Fry via the iTunes Store. And remember, if you want any further information about the stories covered in today's show, just head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's Fish Fryin' page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology, any fun EE conference coming up that I absolutely should attend, or even the best geeky hotspot in your city, shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of June 23rd, 2017, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.